Well, here in the upper Midwest, we certainly treasure the times of year that we can garden outdoors. But, of course, the reality is that for a variety of reasons, including our winter, we do spend a lot of time indoors. So having a range of houseplants that are at their best in different seasons, I think it just makes a lot of sense. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Really pleased to welcome back Tova Martin. Tova is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. She joins us from her home in Connecticut. And Tova, thanks again for joining us for Garden Talk.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here this holiday season.
Oh, and happy holidays. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Now, do you give as gifts, ever holiday gifts, plants?
I sure do. One of my favorite ones. Have you ever received a Flaming Katie?
No. What is a Flaming Katie?
It's a kankoi. Or calancho, however you want to say it, mm-hmm. And it blossoms these. I'm sure you've seen them. There are these like flame-colored flowers, tiny little flowers, and it blossoms and blossoms and blossoms. It blossoms just throughout the winter nonstop. And they come in these flashing colors.
Oh, I've got to look them up. That's how they sound.
Yeah. It's a great gift because it's almost unkillable. I have never met anybody who succeeded in killing it yet.
Flaming Katie. Well, that sounds like a name for a rock group to me. I like that. Oh, man.
Well, the plant world beat them to it.
That's good. That is good. Well,
and how about an amaryllis?
Oh, yeah. I love amaryllis.
Don't they make great presents?
Oh, yes.
You put them in the soil and they just begin to pop up. The flower is like a rocket. It just shoots up, and within about, less than a month from when you've potted it, you've got these huge, ravishing flowers.
I love them, and I do not have one.
You need to call Santa.
I think Santa made a mistake there. I'm going to have to go out on my own and find one because I love them in the office. They add so much to an office. I got a friend who always had one in his office, and it was always beautiful, and gives you a little smile every time I walked into his office. I get a little smile from that plant.
It's true, and they come now there's peaches, but there are whites and reds and deep burgundies, and there's even one called lemon lime or something like that.
That's
kind of off. It's almost yellow. It's a very pretty color, and it blooms. It reblooms too.
Oh man, well that's one I'm going to look into. John in Milwaukee has something for us. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good morning. Yeah, I just bought a small condo that has no windows. It has two balcony entrances. And, of course, I don't get much sunlight in there. And I want to include plants in the house. And I was wondering, are there some special lights I can buy or mm-hmm. grow lights or something like that?
Yeah.
Now, what direction do your windows face?
Southeast. The living room gets some sunlight, you know, but that's it. It's not enough to fill the whole house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, but if you position your plants not far from the panes, southeast is a very, very good light source, actually. You might go for plants that are a little bit lower light. And in fact, you can even do some of the orchids do quite well in low light situations, I've found. Begonias, any of Any members?
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was thinking of bigger plants and like small bushes for the corner of the room
tree?
Or something.
You want a little tree?
Small tree.
Yeah, a little tree. I don't usually find that the regular ficus works that well. Larry, do you have trouble with that also?
Yeah.
What they call the ficus benjamina type, it just doesn't seem to, drops leaves.
Drops all of its leaves in the winter. I mean, it comes back, but it doesn't look very nice for a long time.
Right, right. So instead, I find that there's something called the mistletoe fig that is very easily grown, and it makes a small tree. So that's nice. And by the way, John, you asked about, you were asking about lights, and it is hard to grow like a tree under artificial lights, but Southeast would be sufficient for a small tree. You could work with it's a type of lemon, they call it lemon cypress.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get them for the holidays. They look like a little evergreen, and they're kind of chartreuse colored, and they're very pretty and don't need a whole lot of light.
Okay.
Another idea is a Norfolk Island pine.
Mm-hmm.
You can get those for the holidays. They're probably still in the big box stores, and in supermarkets. I've seen a lot of them around. And you could, that looks like a little evergreen. It's very, very cute. Looks like a little spruce.
Okay, what was that again?
The Norfolk pine.
Oh, okay. Artificial light doesn't really help plants, does it? Like a lamp or something, just a normal lamp.
It has to be sunlight or some
other kind of a grow light.
Really help. No, you'd need a grow light. But again, if you're talking about a large tree, it's hard to grow, larger plants under artificial light. So an alternative would be to go for a plant that likes lower light.
Okay. That makes sense.
Doesn't need all those, mm-hmm. All that wattage.
The new grow lights, just as an aside, what are they, low? I'm trying to think of what we call them now. The low energy using grow lights,
mm-hmm.
I've had good luck with.
Oh. Even with large plants?
Well, I've got my lime tree, under one.
Oh, really?
And I just took, Coco the cat just harvested six limes off Limey, much to my chagrin.
With the SWAT method?
Yeah, the SWAT method. They were all over the bedroom floor. but Limey's not a very big plant. That's not a big lime tree. I mean, it's knee high or sort of.
Knee high would work probably, but that's even better than the ones that I used to grow under. So that's good to know, Larry.
Yeah, it works. It works very well, actually. So,
thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks, John. You can join in too, by the way, if you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Did you get a plant for the holidays? Do you have a favorite house plant? What do you love about it? Give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Lots of children are off for another week from school. In fact, my 11-year-old daughter, Emily, is sitting in the studio right now as we speak, doing something on her smartphone. I'm not sure what. Anyway, she's not the only one. There are thousands of youngsters home for another week. And so I'm thinking that adults might be looking for some fun projects to do with their youngsters. And besides, I know, besides the unexpected houseplant, you've also written a book on terrarium gardening. And, you know, that might be kind of, what's special about terrarium, and what kinds of plants do you do well in them?
You know, terrariums are a great project for kids. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine, I'd given a workshop in terrarium making, and she attended, and she sent me a note a few weeks later. It was right before Thanksgiving that I gave the workshop, and she said, "My idea for Thanksgiving was to put the kids in a room with all the ingredients to make a terrarium and a little instruction sheet." And I went and put them in the room with the terrariums and the instructions and went into the kitchen and finished my Thanksgiving preps, and the kids were totally engrossed in it. So it's a great project if you've got company. But, you know, and terrariums are really like a small world. They're magical. Kids love them. I mean, you can just imagine it's a little world encased in glass, and it's like somebody shrunk the garden, really.
Mm-hmm. What kind of container is good for one?
You know, I don't go for, you know, the Rolls Royce fancy ones that cost a small fortune. I just go into the basement and I find some mason jars. Anything that is wide enough mouth for you to fit your hand into works. You could work with apothecary jars. You could work with little powder jars. You could work with anything, you know, anything with a lid, or it doesn't even have to have a lid. You can use an open vase, even would work, a glass vase. It's best if they are see-through. Soup tureen, you could work with that, too. Or a fishbowl. How's that?
Oh, sure, why not?
If you want to put a cover on it, just, you know, put a plate on top.
Sure, why not? Yeah.
Yeah. And the plants that work in them are, low-light plants, like low-light and high humidity, and stay dwarf. So mosses, ferns, begonias, the little creeping figs, carnivorous plants work great in them. I've worked with, you can even, you know, in a pinch, you could put a pansy in there. Oh, gosh, there are so many plants that work well in them. I've even done it with little miniature hostas. Look so cute in there.
And watering and fertilizing, different?
No fertilizing. You want those little babies to stay little.
Oh.
You don't want to give it the breakfast of champions. You don't want to make a giant out of that. You want it to stay small. So don't fertilize is what I suggest. But watering, the terrarium will tell you when it needs water. So what you can do is you can water it when you first plant it, close it up, and then air it out in about 10 days to 2 weeks, and put the lid back on. And if there's condensation on the terrarium's walls, then you know it's good to go and it's fine. It doesn't need more water. But if there's no condensation, give it a little drink.
There we go. Tova Martin, our guest today, author of many gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Tova Martin about caring for your houseplants. Great to have her with us. You can join in with questions, comments, or experiences to share at 1-800-642-1234. You can also go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And we were talking earlier in the show about Flaming Katie, a plant that Tova was recommending. And Judith has posted a photo of it up on our Facebook page. So if you want to see what that plant looks like, go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can find out right there. And I'm going to have to go to it myself and take a look. I haven't done that yet. Oh, man. Dolores in Kenosha, thanks for calling. Hi.
Oh, hi. Tova, it's so nice to have you here. I love The Unexpected Houseplant. I've read and reread that book. It's if you've got a spot, there is a plant for it. But
there
my comment was about the terrariums. And I've done them, and I have this giant acid bottle, which I can't plant because it's got the small opening, and I could get the plants in there. But as I was telling Judith, I always kill them with kindness because they get too wet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going through my cupboards, and I have all these carafes left over from dead coffee makers. And every time you buy a new coffee maker, the old pot doesn't work with it. So I thought it would be perfect because it's got a wide top, but it's not totally enclosed.
Exactly.
But it would, enough so that it would keep the stuff in there moist.
And
yeah.
It does. Anytime you have a glass container with sides, especially the bean, sort of the bean or carafe shape, it does raise the humidity above what you've got in your normal house, but it isn't totally closed. So that works really well.
I love it. It's got its own top built in, too, that you can just easily let flip up or leave down. I like that idea, Dolores.
Oh, glad to talk to both of you.
Good idea, and great for, terrariums are really wonderful for those of us who keep a lot of glassware around the house, that you don't have an actual use for, and suddenly, bang, there's a use for something that you've very frugally saved.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's a beautiful thing. I mean,
yeah.
Even just one plant in a terrarium, even just I can just envision a fern in a carafe would be beautiful.
A nice little kitchen accessory.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dolores.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it very much. Happy New Year. Kathy in Waukesha, it is your turn. Hi, Kath.
Oh, yes. Getting back to the amaryllis, I give those as gifts. And generally in August, I order the bulbs from a really good bulb company because that's where you get the real good variety and the really great bulbs. And then I pot them up probably in October. I give them away at Thanksgiving time. And then the early ones, the Christmas ones, will bloom before the regular ones do. So that's my suggestion. If you want good amaryllis bulbs or good amaryllis with big variety, then order from a really good bulb company.
Yeah. That's it. What do you
think? I think that's really excellent advice. The amaryllis, you can get, as I said, you can get almost any color, but you also know that they've been treated, perfectly up to the point that you receive them. And I think Kathy gave us a little point on that there are now varieties that are especially timed for holiday giving. They blossom a little bit earlier than the old amaryllis did, and sometimes they're a little bit, slightly smaller, but I like that because usually they have more flower spikes. Have you found that, Kathy?
Yeah, but I've found that with all of them, actually. And when the bulbs come, some of them are so huge. I'm not talking about the Christmas ones now. And I've had sometimes three stalks come on some of the bulbs. You can't find those varieties at the grocery store. You don't find those varieties at Menards, so on and so forth. You really have to order them from good catalogs.
Yeah.
It's true, and there's a lot going on with amaryllis. They have there's doubles now also, which mm-hmm. are awfully fun. You can get ones that look like huge, like snowflakes or something. They're just gorgeous, and voluptuous flowers, very, very beautiful. And each flower on an amaryllis lasts a very, very long time. It's you get a lot of a lot of bang for your buck with an amaryllis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, actually, another thing I found that when they get really tall and start tipping over, I just cut them off and put them in a vase with water, and I think they last a little bit longer. And they look so pretty that way. Then you cut some leaves off and you stuff them in the vase, too. So they are really great.
Oh, thank you very much.
They do, and that is a point. I'm glad you made that point because they really are a little bit top-heavy, so it's always a good idea to stake them, which tends to be a little difficult sometimes. You don't want to spear the
right.
bulb, but they do topple very easily.
Yeah. Thank you again, Kathy. Appreciate it very much. And I want to give Kathleen in Middleton a chance to join us as well. Kathleen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, hello. Yes, my daughter works in an indoor office with no lights other than fluorescence, and she would love to have a plant sitting on top of a cabinet with maybe some trailing, you know, vines going down or something like that. And is there anything at all that would bloom in, or not bloom, but grow in just fluorescent lights?
Well, you made a good point, Kathleen, that flowers are very difficult on in very low light situations. So you're probably going to have to go with a plant that is a non-flowering plant, a foliage plant. And fortunately, there are some that do pretty well under fluorescent lights. And I would suggest one thing that I've been working a lot with are the little air plants. The beauty of those are that they don't even need soil. You can just put them in like a glass container and give them, what I do is I soak mine once a week I just sort of soak them and then take them out and, once a week. So that's very low maintenance. And so air plants, the Tillandsia is what they're called. They're in the bromeliad family, and the pineapple family that is. And those are wonderful, wonderful plants for low light. I also, you can try working also with ivies. Some of the ferns will do very well in low light. Aspidistra, it's a little bit harder to find, but it will work in very, very low light, I've found. I've done the flaming Katie in pretty low light, actually, amazingly enough for a bloomer. I found that seems to go in very low light without ever complaining. And, in fact, some of the other calanchoes, the teddy bear plant, et cetera, they do very, very well in low, low light.
What about a terrarium? Would that work on a desk, say, sitting on the desk and without natural light?
Yes, if you gave it, light from a fluorescent light, that should work. And again, if I were working with a terrarium, I would do plants in it that are very low-light plants, like ferns.
Okay.
Even in that situation, just be sure you work with the lowest-light plants possible.
Okay, and my daughter's name is Katie, so maybe we'll try the flaming Katie.
That's perfect.
It's a try.
I love it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Kathleen. Appreciate that call. Well, yeah, Katie's got to try the flaming Katie for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we had a great, some great photos on our Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Barbara sent a couple of photos of her Christmas cactus plants. She's got one that, oh, these are beautiful Christmas cactus. The flowers on her Christmas cactus plants are about three times as big as the ones I have on mine. These are just enormous. Snow white, and then a pink one that is just absolutely beautiful.
They are so fulfilling. And there, you can get a flower on a Christmas cactus from almost from one sprig. It doesn't have to be a large plant, I've found. They happen very quickly and from just a little cutting.
Yeah, I had the last one that I had was got to be enormous, just absolutely enormous.
That's when you need to take cuttings and give them to other people.
Yeah, exactly. That plant was cut up and distributed around around the country, because some of the students got some of my students from college got sprigs. And so I'm pretty sure if they're still living, they could be in several states, which is kind of cool. Kathleen in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi. Kathleen, are you? Oh, wait a second. There. Now I had the volume turned down. Now I have the volume back up. Kathleen, hello.
Okay. Hello. I have a piggyback plant that I'm wondering if I can rescue it. It's got some brown leaves. On the outer part of the plant. The inside is still green. And, gosh, I hate to see it, pass away, because it's such a special plant to me, because as growing up, my Aunt Alice always had one in her window. And so they're hard to find.
They are hard to find nowadays.
If I could rescue that somehow.
Do you have any of them making little piggybacks?
Yes, I do.
Great. Now, the piggyback plant, for the listeners that haven't seen one, they have the felted leaf, which is almost like looks like a heuchera leaf or a begonia leaf, actually. And they make little tiny shoots right out of the middle where the leaf meets the leaf stem. There's a little bitty plant that they call it the piggyback, because it looks like one plant's on top of the other plant. And what you can do is you can take that leaf off, you can put it in the soil so that the soil is touching that little tiny place where the leaf meets the stem, and you can put that in the soil and it'll root
and
start another plant.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense.
I should give that a shot. And I do have grow lights that I'm trying to cut my coleus plants from the summer and regrow them. And would that be helpful to put it under those grow lights with, say, some wood?
Yes. Same sort of situation that a coleus would like. They like almost identical light conditions, and so it would be exactly the same.
Wonderful.
Just water it lightly while it's rooting and making, becoming a plant unto itself.
Correct. Okay. Thank you for your help.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for coming.
Good luck with it.
You can join in, too, by the way. We have open lines again, finally, so we can get you on with your questions. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Have a question about a plant or an experience to share relating to your houseplants, we'd love to hear them. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And we have some emails and Facebook questions as well. Email from Bob in Madison. I'm growing a number of lithops, living stones, in my house. How often shall I water them, and how do I determine when they need water?
Well, the listener made a very good point on that one, because it really does. You don't want to overwater a lithops. They're made for very, very, very arid growing conditions. They're in their native region. And a lithops looks like they call it a living stone, because it looks like a tiny little stone that's actually, it's hard to imagine that it's a growing thing. It looks like a pebble. And it's hard to say exactly when to water. I wouldn't water it any more than once every 10 days or so.
Okay.
And in the lower light times of year, like now, you might want to wait for every 2 weeks, actually, to water. In the meantime, I hope you're giving it a very sandy soil mix to grow in. Almost, you know, I've actually seen them grown in almost pure sand.
Wow.
So be careful not to give it a soil that will stay, you know, moist. Let it. Good drainage is everything for lithops.
There we go. Well, here's a nice Facebook message for you from Rebecca, Tova. She says, Tova, I love you, and I'm so starstruck. I've been compulsively reading The Unexpected Houseplant for the last 6 months and have collected most of your recommendations. I've just gotten quite a few. Are they slumbergrass? Slumbergeras?
Slumbergia.
Slumbergia, that's...
That's your Christmas cactus.
That's the Christmas... Of course, that's the Christmas cactus. Well, she's wondering if you have any post-bloom care tips for them. Should I hold off water for 6 weeks after they bloom, as I've read in the from elsewhere?
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
I haven't either. Seems like a long time to go without water.
Yeah, it is. And the fact is that I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for them to stop blooming, because they bloom and bloom and bloom. Mine started before Thanksgiving this year. I kept joking that it was the Halloween cactus. And it kept right on going. So I would prolong that as long as I can. And they don't need a dormancy. There's no need to put them into a dormancy. I would just keep on regular, but don't overwater. That's the key on those, not to overwater them. And another thing some people go wrong with on that one is that they give it too much light in the summer. You don't want to give it like harsh outdoor light in the summer, because they will burn.
Yeah, it's you can have problems with them that way. I had an ideal spot for them in my for mine in my office, because it didn't get direct sunlight and I neglected it, so it was always blooming. It bloomed the year round, I swear.
I love neglect. Well, Larry, I've got a book coming up that's, I guess it's meant for you, and it's called The Indestructible Houseplant, coming up in June. So that one will be, that one has you in mind.
Well, and we'll definitely have you back to talk about that book when it comes out. We had a Facebook question from Steve, also relating to Christmas cactus. It's about, he has one about 7-8 years old, just finished blooming. However, this year it only produced blossoms on a few spots. I trim it back occasionally, and it's on the east side of my house against a window, only a little direct sun. Wondering why it didn't bloom fully. I don't fertilize it. I just water it.
No, what was the plant again?
Christmas cactus.
And it hasn't rebloomed.
It's 7-8 years old, and it bloomed, but kind of it was spotty. It produced blossoms on just a few spots.
Sounds like two things might be going on there. He might need to rotate it so that everything, you know, it gets even light. And another thing is that some people, you know, they look at that plant and they say, wow, that plant's really going strong. I'm going to repot it. And that can be not great for blossoms. They like to be tightly potted, actually, and bloom best when they're tightly potted.
Yeah, I've had people call and say, darn it, I repotted, and then my plant died. You know?
Yeah, well, you can always demote, too. Give it a demotion.
Yeah, go the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beth in Green Bay, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. Yeah, my call is I bought a little grocery Christmas pine 20 years ago. I don't know if it's a Norway pine or a tropical pine, whatever they call it. And now it's over 10 feet tall. Oh, and I'm running out of ceilings. Now, someone suggested that I cut off the top, but I don't know if that would look good.
I don't think so really cut the top off.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
That.
Okay.
So it's not that sort of thing. In its native, you know, region, it will get, you know, quite tall. But my suggestion is that you need to start with junior, I think.
You need to get a junior version. Oh, okay.
Norfolk Island Pine in training. Yeah, and start anew. It needs a little understudy there.
What do I do? Just let the big one grow and find a new one for it?
Yeah, I don't. If it's the tropical one, it's not going to survive in your region.
Not outside,
unfortunately.
Outside,
so
no,
you need to find somebody with a greenhouse.
I had, I'm just thinking about my previous house on the lake, and we had a 20-foot high, I think it was around 20-foot high room, and that would have been the perfect spot for your Norway pine.
I bet you, Beth, it's acting as a Christmas tree for you, too, huh?
Oh, yeah. And we decorated Christmas time, but, yeah, it's 10 feet tall. It's in my shop right now, and my shop has about a 12-foot ceiling. So it's got a little bit more room to grow, but then it's going to outgrow.
You've got to start looking at friends' homes.
I think I'll do that.
and in the meantime, get a replacement.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
I will do that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Beth. Thanks for calling. Yeah, you can start looking at the ceilings in your friends' homes. How high is the ceiling?
Oh, man.
We're going to come. David and LaCrosse and Jeff and Beloit, among other people, are going to be joining us. But just to remind you that you're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network as we visit with Tova Martin, author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. I'm Larry Mueller with Judith Sears Poisson here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Join us this afternoon at 12:30 when Jim Fleming reads from The Chimes by Charles Dickens on Chapter a Day. Then from 1 to 3, it's Science Friday. Think you know your sci-fi film science? Can you tell your black holes from your antimatter? At 2, we'll look at the science of the silver screen. Later at 3, stay with us for Central Time.
Tune into Wisconsin Public Television Wednesday night at 7 for Live from Lincoln Center, New York Philharmonic New Year's Eve. Ring in the new year with style and swagger as jazz great Diane Reeves and Broadway leading man Norm Lewis join the New York Philharmonic for a lush orchestral bounty of Gershwin classics. Live from Lincoln Center, New York Philharmonic New Year's Eve, Wednesday night at 7 on Wisconsin Public Television.
Support for WPR comes from Fromagination on the Capitol Square in downtown Madison, a locally owned source for Wisconsin artisanal cheese with specialty foods, gourmet gifts, and custom catering. More at fromagination.com. Support also comes from Fontana Sports in Madison, locally owned outdoor shops featuring winter apparel from The North Face, Columbia, and Patagonia, as well as snowshoes, skis, and more. Locations west and downtown. FontanaSports.com.
Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking houseplants on this edition of Garden Talk with Tova Martin, who has been with us a number of times. Always so much fun to have her come by. She's the author, as I said, of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. And I really like that book, Tova. It's full of wonderful photos to really give, you can really get some great ideas from your book.
Well, thank you so much. They were taken in my home, and you can't imagine how many plants are here. I lost count with 200. I just, it, plants everywhere.
Well, it must be just a it must be a joy to come visit. I'm not so sure that I'd want to be the one taking care of them.
Well, it's true. My dad once asked me how long it takes me to water them. Every time I water, and basically I figured it out at 3/4 of an hour. Actually.
Oh my goodness! But you know, what do you do it? Once a week, maybe?
Once or twice a week, depending upon what the weather's like and whether the heat's running. But it's a very pleasurable 3/4 of an hour.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, actually, that's pretty moving right along there as far as
it, I do. I keep the drinks coming.
Oh, boy. Well, David in La Crosse has a question. Hi, David.
Hi. Yeah, my question was if you knew anything about, the plants would grow faster, how hydroponics actually would work for that. And I was also considering, maybe the kitchen herbs and if that would be a way to do those.
Kitchen herbs hydroponically, is that what you're asking about?
Mm-hmm.
I have seen a lot of hydroponic units with herbs. I always, think of them as kind of low-water plants. But people are having a lot of luck with, the basil and that sort of thing. If you grow the right basil, especially the miniature kind. And, of course, mints do really well with a lot of moisture.
One of my favorite
would work.
Is cilantro?
Cilantro works, but, of course, it's a kind of a fast-moving annual, so it's not a long... as a houseplant, it won't last a really long time. But,
okay.
David, I work with parsley. And it until it starts to go up to blossom, which takes usually until the end of the winter, it's a great little plant and gives me lots of parsley. I've done indoors. I've done sage. I've done oregano. Oregano would be great hydroponically, I bet.
Mm-hmm.
I've done thyme. Works really well as a house plant. That might not do so well hydroponically because it likes to dry out between waterings. Winter savory, great house plant.
I've got a huge rosemary plant in the.
Do you? And how's it doing?
Oh, great! It's
wow!
It's my companion. I planted it to as a companion to keep Limey company.
I thought it was to keep the cat from picking on Limey.
Well, the cats like the rosemary too, believe me. But it smells good,
it does, and the cat swats it, and it smells even better.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's I've had very good luck with it in a south facing window. So
yeah, you probably keep your house to keep it a little coolish.
Yeah,
because they like that.
So there you go, David.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Jeff in Beloit, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Not to say anything demeaning, but I wondered about a book, and maybe your guest book might fit that category. And like I said, I don't want to say anything demeaning, but I was looking for something like a book called House Plants for Dummies.
Well, I tried to make it, with all my books, I have a little sidebar of how to take care of the plants at a glance so that you can sort of quickly look through it and see if that plant is the plant for you. But my theory, Jeff, is that everybody can grow. There's no such thing as a brown thumb. It's all in just...
I don't know.
You don't sound convinced.
Oh, my goodness.
I have trouble growing aloe plants. I just don't know when to water them, and I really do need something that is a good guide for me. And another thing that came up while I was thinking about this House Plants for Dummies book is maybe an app for smartphones.
Oh, Yeah.
There you
so
go.
You could, you know, program the plant to or the phone to tell you when it's time to water.
Well, unfortunately, you
know, I really have problems doing that basic thing like that. I'm sorry to admit it. I'm ashamed to admit it, I mean, but
you know, some people don't think that outdoor weather has to do with their houseplants, and I think that they're crazy. The sun, you know, it has a lot to do with the weather outside. If it's sunny, you need to water more often than if it's rainy and cloudy outside. And it also has to do with how often your heat goes on in your house. Whether, you know, in very, very cold weather, I find that I'm watering more often. How about you, Larry, with Limey and Rosemary there? Do you water more often when it's very cold out?
Actually, it's a little bit more often, by a day or two.
Yeah. So I'm not sure your app would have to be keyed into the Weather Channel.
But actually, you know, Jeff, I think the one thing, for example, your book, The Unexpected Houseplant, with all of the photos, there's so many good ideas for anybody from the dummy to the professional house planter. And then all of the, as you say, all the sidebars that you have, I think it's a good book for anybody from the novice to the professional.
Yeah, I really, I'm such an advocate for growing indoors that, and I think, Jeff, you know, with your aloe, I think an aloe is a plant that's very, very forgiving. And there are a lot of forgiving plants out there that don't, you know, their nose doesn't get out of joint, as we would say, when you forget to water, or if you, you know, overwater a little bit, they don't pout. So there you go.
Well, I think mine are pouting, but they've been hanging in there with all the abuse I've been giving them. I really want to make a New Year's resolution to do better, and I thought a book might help me.
Well, you might take a look at Tova's book. Go online.
Give it a try. Yeah. And you can call in to our next show and boast about how well your plants are doing.
Well, all right.
All right, Jeff. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. Well, it's true, you know. I think your book's kind of inspiring because you see all the different ways you can position the houseplants or the different containers, and my goodness, it really is kind of inspiring. It makes me want to go out and buy some more houseplants.
Well, Larry, you know, my whole theory is that if it's more beautiful, you'll take more time, you know, you tend to take more time to take care for the plants. If it becomes part of your decor, that's an important thing. And so the beauty of it is part of it, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. We had a Facebook comment from Becky talking about Christmas cactus again. She said, "We've been taking cuttings from our Christmas cactus the easy way this year. The poor plant has been knocked over twice this fall, so I've potted up the breakings.
I love it. You know, that's one. Everybody who reads my book and follows me on Facebook knows that I've got my little sidekick here is Nemesis, the plant's nemesis sometimes is Einstein, my cat, and he's a Maine Coon. Rescue kitten, and he does a lot of plant bouncing. So that's the positive. Becky's got the positive way of looking at it. Those just mean more cuttings for more friends.
And I have to tell you, it was a few nights ago, about 3:30 in the morning. Ooh. I'm in bed, and here's this crash. And Coco had managed to knock both limey and the rosemary plant off. And they off of stools that I had them on, and they both landed upright somehow.
Wow.
So,
well, she's got them trained, and I'm sure that they pointed the finger elsewhere when not at her.
Well, those cats, yeah, Coco and Tiger were nowhere to be seen. I mean, they took off. They must have, like, have been shot out of a cannon, because I was bolt upright in bed and wondering what the heck happened. And
that's called, Larry, you know, that's called things that go bang in the night.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Jackie in Milwaukee, by the way, says, we were talking about terrariums earlier, and she said, don't forget about aquariums, and because, you know, they even have light on top, a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah, she's right about that. And aquariums, fish bowls even, make fine terrariums. Just, again, if you want it to be closed, you can just put either a piece of glass on top or on an aquarium. I put a glass plate on top of it, if you want it to be closed.
Mm-hmm.
But they make you don't have to invest a whole lot of money in this. That's the point.
Yeah, we had a Facebook comment from Katie as well. We're talking about what plants can work well under fluorescence. And she says philodendron plants, for example, can work well under fluorescence. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, and that's a great low light. When people were asking about very low light callers in, that's a really good idea for a low light plant. And there's some beautiful new ones. There's one called, I think it's called Brazil, that's variegated with yellow and green. It's very, very good looking.
Oh, that's another one I haven't seen. I'm going to have to look that one up. And I'm just now seeing on our Facebook page that Judith has, in fact, and she told me she did, had posted Flaming Katie, an orange, kind of on a burnt orange version of the plant. It's on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So, well worth a look. It's a beautiful plant. Our guest today, Tova Martin, the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. Our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Friday means Garden Talk, of course, and today we're turning our attention to the plants that share your home and mine. And I think we can probably talk about a lot of things relating to those plants, because our guest is Tova Martin. She is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. She joins us from her home in Connecticut. And Tova, again, thank you so much for being with us on Garden Talk.
Well, this is a major holiday treat, Larry.
It's a lot of fun for me, I can tell you that.
I'm having so much fun.
We have lots of questions. Open lines, if you'd like to join in with a question about houseplants or maybe an experience to share, we'd love that as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And we did have a Facebook question from Katie I wanted to take. Says, I have a sensitive plant that seems to be going into a dormant state this winter. Is this common or is it dying? I have it in a southwest window and keep the soil fairly moist.
Well, Katie, the sensitive plant is a, it's not a long-lived plant naturally. It will, it's usually grown from seed before they sell them, and little seedlings, and they live, you know, a few months, and then they begin to, unfortunately, they begin to die back and die off, and you have to get a new one. So it's nothing you're doing wrong. I guess that's the good news, is that there's nothing you're doing wrong, but unfortunately, and by the way, you can tickle a sensitive plant and make it close and open up as many times as you want. It doesn't harm the plant at all.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they don't live very long.
Gigi in Viroqua, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Merry Christmas to everyone.
To you as well.
Yes. Thank you.
I have two gardenias, and they look good on the leaf side, but they don't know how to flower. And I don't know what I'm missing to make them flower.
Well, I'm not sure. Larry, have we ever had a show where we didn't have a gardenia question?
I don't.
They're tricky.
They're a challenge. They're a challenge. Gardenia. And you're doing very, very well if the plant is looking good, because they don't blossom usually over the winter. So I would be very surprised if you called in and said you were your gardenia plant was covered with blossoms. I would have to send you some sort of prize or something. But they usually bloom only in the summer, and it's really kind of a function of light. But in general, gardenias need a good bright south window, and they like to dry out between waterings, but not too much. And they like high humidity and warm temperatures. So, if your gardenia is looking good, that's like 99% of the battle.
Yeah.
All right. So, when do you give up? Because you know we love the gardenia flower, not the plant, right?
Yeah.
So, when do I give up and say, "You're never going to bloom again," and I'm just going to let you go?
How long have you had the plant?
I haven't been ready to say goodbye to this one for about 3 years.
Ooh, so you've never seen a blossom again in 3 years?
When we first bought it, it had blossoms,
You're a patient lady.
Yes.
Have you ever tried putting it outside for a summer vacation?
Last summer it was out, the summer before. When do I give up on this thing?
Boy, I'd be right there about giving up now. Right about now.
I think you're doing
it was me.
Well, with 3 years. But is it? Have you potted it? If you kept giving it pot promotions, because you don't want to. It might be getting too much nourishment, perhaps.
Well, it looks good. You know, the leaves look good, and it's growing.
Yeah. It is possible that there's too much fertilizer involved, and it's just happy to be growing leaves.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like it's being a little bit of a maybe enjoying your hospitality a little too much and just growing.
So back off on the fertilizer.
Maybe you should be a meaner. a meaner gardener.
Okay.
And give it one more year. Might as well give it, I'd cut back on the fertilizer and let's see what happens.
Yeah, and I would give it some strong language. I would tell it, it's either perform or leave or be escorted out. How's that?
There we go. Thanks, Gigi. Appreciate the call.
Threats work wonderfully, I found.
Maureen in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you. I have kind of the opposite question in a way. I purchased a plant when my husband and I were first married in 1971. It was a beautiful hanging African violet, but I don't know the genus name. It survived and survived. It bloomed every day until we moved to Eau Claire, and then it bloomed once a year for a couple months. When my husband died in 2008, because it was such a special plant when we got first got married, I transplanted it. It would grow and grow, and it would trail down so that the stem would hang on the edge of the pot and sometimes lose the leaves except at the bottom. And so I thought, well, I'll transplant and I'll start a few. And I tried to start a few, and when I transplanted it, I don't know if it was bad potting soil, it completely died. And I have no longer that plant. And I don't know how to replace it because I really don't know if it has a certain name. I haven't seen them anywhere here.
Do you have a photo?
Did you take a picture of it ever?
Do I have a photo? No. It was a a furry leaf, like a violet. It was pink flowered, but they had blue ones at the time when I bought it. And instead of the, you know, upright leaf through one stem, it would actually hang down. And it was a huge plant. It was absolutely huge, and it was prolific. And now I don't have it, and I'm, you know,
sad
trying
about
to
that.
Replace it.
Yeah.
You could try looking up Streptocarpella. I know it's a mouthful.
Well, I know the word Streptocarpus. There's a summer.
Yeah, Streptocarpella could be one of those. And they are, you know, have small leaves about the size of your fingernail and furry. And then they droop down on the stems. And they bloom kind of blue flowers. But you do you have one now, or you're just
trying to find one?
It's gone. It's totally gone.
Yeah. Well, look up Streptocarpella. That might be a starting point for you to try to find what and the African Violet Society might have.
Oh, I just wrote that down on a piece of paper. I just wrote that down.
Violet Society. The leaves were actually good size, like an African violet size. They weren't little like Streptocarpella.
They weren't. No. Okay. Try looking on the African Violet Society website and see if maybe they have a photo library up of
that. Would be a good idea.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
But in general, indirect light. You might have over-potted it, or you might have given it soil that was, you know, they like a very light potting soil. And you, as far as, you know, cutting them back, you can do it usually on the trailing types. You can do it pretty often. And without any, you know, and it'll just, you know, kind of revive itself.
I hope that works. It lasted for 8 years, and it breaks my heart. But we can try again.
Try again.
Yeah. I'm trying to off the top of my head. I can't think of any other members of that family with leaves about the same size as a Streptocarpus. I mean, of African violet. But there are. It's a vast family. It really is. It's much larger than just the African violets and the ones we know. You know, the flaming violets. It's much more than that. Usually.
Thanks, Maureen, for calling. I appreciate it. You know, caller Jean wonders. This is an interesting question and timely now. Poinsettias. How do they get all those new colors that the poinsettias come in, and would they rebloom in the same color? I mean, at one time it was red.
Good question.
That was what you got.
Good question. Yeah, exactly. Well, how they get all those new colors, of course, you know that it's not the flower. It's the leaves that, the flower bracts that are turning those wonderful colors. The flowers themselves are these little button things in the very middle of that. But you can imagine that this is a multi-million, maybe billion-dollar industry. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But they do a lot of breeding with these plants, and they get there's variegated foliage. There's beautiful, beautiful colors, and there's all sizes now too. And there's curly bracts. all kinds of things out there. And because if you keep that same plant or root a cutting from that plant, it should perform as its parent did, because it's the same plant technically. So it will rebloom the way you, you know, in the same mode. That said, you're going to have to, you know, sort of go through the, you know, the 10-week cycle of 12 hours or less of light in, you know, late autumn.
And it's miserable. And if you mess up one day, you have to start all over again. It's the worst of it.
Yeah, you really have to give them the closet treatment.
Oh, I tell you, I
would just start again. I think that you could go to that nursery, and you remind them the one. You know, remind them if you love that plant. Say, oh gosh, get me the ones that are white, or get me the ones that are pink and with white edges, or whatever color it was that you loved. And I'm sure they'd be glad.
Oh, yes.
Glad to help.
Pam in Sister Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. And is it Tova?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, hi. I'm calling for Jeff, the guy who called a little while ago who said he could not grow anything and he had a super big problem with watering.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember him?
Yes, oh, for sure.
Yellow man, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so...
The Houseplants for Dummies fellow.
Yes.
Yeah, him. Okay, so I can grow plants, but I have a lot of time to take care of them. So what I do in my house, and I live in the woods in Sister Bay, and I take little cuttings of philodendrons, and I put them in water in different funky vases that I get at secondhand stores or anything, and not a lot, just like one or two cuttings, and you just put it in there, and they develop this beautiful root system, and you can see it through the glass, and all you need to do is keep the container full of water.
Sure.
Well, that's a good idea. It works really well for philodendrons because they're so easy. And
exactly.
And there you got a little plant, and you could do it with coleus, too, sometimes.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, you could do it with ivies. I'm trying to think of other plants that this would work for. There's a lot, you know, it was worth a try. And you're right. They're lovely little plants. And then you don't even have to worry about how often you need to water it, right?
Because the water's there. And the roots, you're right, the roots are pretty in their own right.
Oh, you can see it through the vase. And I heat my house with wood, so I have, you know, pretty dry air. And it's beautiful. You can also put a sprig of it, you know, just do a cutting because I have a couple main plants that are in soil. And I just cut off a couple pieces. And then what I've done is put that in like a little jar of water and set the jar inside of a planter.
Uh-huh.
So it looks like, you know, you have a plant growing, but it's actually just sitting in there in water and you don't have to worry about it.
No.
Well, you know, I think the glass is just beautiful anyway.
Yeah.
So you can you can get all kinds of colors of glass too,
yes.
and colors of vases, and it's a very beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Good and idea, Pam.
Remember to keep the water clean though, or else it will smell a little yucky.
Yeah,
I haven't had that problem. What works the best is a container with a really narrow top,
mm-hmm.
So you don't get a lot of evaporation. But anyway, that's my tip for Jeff.
Pam, thank you. Thank you very much. Happy New Year. Appreciate your call. And Diane in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, good morning to you. I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
My question is about geraniums. I brought them in from outside. It had a lovely summer outside. And I repotted them. They were in okay shape. They had bloomed but become really leggy. So I cut them back, and they filled in really nicely. But there's no flowers, and recently they started getting a lot of yellow leaves. So I'm wondering what I have done to them. They have,
you know, the brown leaves are usually a usually because they've dried out at some point. That's okay. Usually what the brown leaves are trying to tell you. So if you try, a little bit more even on the watering, perhaps, and on flowers, mine are, even though we've had the cloudiest autumn, on record even, everybody's commenting about it here on the East Coast.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, they need a little bit more light. Mine are beginning to blossom now that we're finally getting a little bit of sunlight again. But and they're, you know, they're poised to bud up. They don't wait until summer. They will bloom all winter in good light.
That was my memory of them from when I was growing up. And fertilizing.
And what? I'm sorry?
What about fertilizing?
Oh, what about fertilizing?
I don't fertilize the geraniums. And in general, I don't fertilize my plants between Thanksgiving and March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Because light levels are lower. And basically, on the geraniums, I want them to make flowers, really, and not a whole lot of growth. So, and I don't want them to be leggy. So I just hold off on fertilizer for that little time period.
That makes sense. Diane, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. And Randy in Sauk County, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, see, I have a question. I brought in from one of our flower gardens outside a tremendous crop of hollyhocks this year and dried them and got the harvested the seeds. And they go back generations in our family. And remembering back, the ladies used to grow these and then have flowers like on the altar on Sunday in church or whatever. And so can I plant these now, and how do I do that, and will they actually flower this year inside?
Indoors, okay. Can you plant
hollyhocks indoors?
From seed.
From seed. Well, you know, a hollyhock is a big plant.
Yeah.
That's what I'm asking.
If I were you, you could certainly start the seeds, fairly soon. They are biennial, which means they bloom every other year. So it usually, it can take 2 years from seed. But if you start them very early, sometimes that can be a little bit of a trick to get them to bloom the first season. So, Randy, I think you come up with a little bit of a nice trick to getting them to bloom maybe in your growing season, your first growing season.
Yeah, it's
They're beautiful,
Oh, yeah, they are beautiful. Well, that's sure worth a try. You know, like we always talk about with gardeners, that's half the fun of gardening, I think, is just the experimenting and the trying new things.
Well, Randy, if I give you a little suggestion, you might save some of those seeds for later also.
Yeah.
This sounds like it's a very important family heirloom, which is a wonderful thing you're doing. Mm-hmm. Always take the safe avenue and keep some seeds for later, too.
And thank you very much for calling, Randy. And Tova, thank you so much. Boy, the 90 minutes just flew by.
Didn't it? I had so much fun.
Well, we'll certainly get you back as soon as we can. Thank you, Tova.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Tova Martin, take a look at her book. She has a dozen of them, but The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home, certainly worth a look. And, you know, she's always such a delight to talk with on the air. And the time just flies by. You know, on Monday at 11, we have a treat for you. The weather guys are going to be with us for the whole 90 minutes. That's going to be a lot of fun. In the meantime, I hope you'll stay listening. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And again, thanks for listening.